I now want to move on to a very important item, that being the performance review of the GCF. Now, I know that we, in our informal session, have had a preview of this item, but as it's such an important part of looking about, looking at what we've achieved and what more we might yet achieve in GCF1, it's right that it comes here to the formal session, and that we allow members to make such views as they would like to make in the formal session, with an eye on the clock, of course. And so I'm now going to invite Joe Puri from the IEU to make a presentation, also with an eye on the clock, Joe. Very good. Rapid fire. Okay, Joe, you have the floor.
Thank you so much, Chair. It's really a huge privilege for me to be here with all of you, while noting that, yes, there was a session in the informal board session where we discussed some of these issues. And before I start, I do want to acknowledge the STAR team that supported this forward-looking performance review that consisted not just of the IEU staff and consultants that we have, but also an external consortium. It was an effort of will, but also of trust that we could deliver this within the ambitious timeline that we had and with the scope and the evidence base that you required for this to be extremely credible and high quality. So with that, Chair, I want to draw your attention to the forward-looking performance review of the GCF delivered now in time for the first replenishment of the GCF, and underscoring the fact that we are doing this performance review, or we've done this performance review with a focus on informing how GCF can be faster, smarter, and better. At B2117, the board decided to ask the IEU to focus on the progress, performance, and portfolio of the GCF to inform its forward directions. Given that, the performance review, and I'm going to completely skip over the methodology part, but very happy to have that discussion with anyone bilaterally or multilaterally later. With that, we want to first start by saying that the GCF has achieved much in a very, very short time. The reason that I'm here, that all of you are here, is because that this institution represents a promise not just to this generation, but for all generations to come. In the 5 or so years that it's been around, it's still very young, but it has achieved a lot. With $7.1 billion of committed capital, 147 NDAs, 120 countries that it's working in, and $5.3 billion that it's committed on the ground, these are really big achievements for the fund to show. It's very ambitious. With its paradigm shift potential objective, it has essentially transcended what current climate funds and other multilateral institutions try to do in the climate finance space. And we also want to underscore that we see that the board is extremely influential with equal representation and a strong voice, and that represents as well a contribution to a potential paradigm shift in this space. With that, we want to note that from the time that the GCF was conceived and its inception, the world has changed. The world has changed in very different ways. The needs of developing countries have increased exponentially, but also there are many other actors, bilaterals, multilaterals, and DFIs that have come into this space, and especially in the mitigation space. With that, it becomes even more important that we focus as an institution on impact and speed. With all of that in mind, the four questions that the FPR looked at was, at a meta level, first, we wanted to answer the question, is the GCF ready to deliver a paradigm shift in the climate change space? And we then divided that into four sub-questions. We looked at whether the structure of the GCF is appropriate for this function. Second, whether it's able to deliver large flows. Third, whether it's making an impact on developing country needs. And fourth, what could be its potential focus going forward? Our key recommendations, just by way of an overview, and I'll delve into these a little bit more as I go along, are for the GCF, it is really important to deliver better for developing countries and for climate. More precisely, it needs a new strategic plan. It has a valid business model, but it needs to deliver better. It needs to re-emphasize itself and its portfolio on adaptation and innovation. And it needs to re-examine how it creates an enabling environment for better decision-making. With that, then, I'm going to discuss these four questions very quickly. So the first question, then, Chair, was, has the governing instrument translated into an adequate structure? And the reason this question is worded in this way is that we want to make it very clear that the governing instrument was our starting point. It's the sacred document that we started off from and then informed the rest of the FPR. In terms of structure, what we found is, well, the business model with its networks of accredited entities and NDAs is a very valid business model, but it also helps the GCF in creating the coalition of the willing for a paradigm shift that it wants to achieve. The second question that we looked at in this case was, how long does it take entities to access the GCF? And with that, we found the following things. In asking the question, how long does it take for entities to become eligible to access GCF resources, we first looked at accreditation. Many of you are very familiar with the accreditation process and the framework. It's divided into three stages, and the first two stages then lead to board signing. Currently, the first two stages take about 500 to 580 days for entities to go through, and then stage three, which is post-board approval, takes another 500 days. Overall, this is about 1,000 days for accreditation. This might seem like a lot, and we decided to explore this in the overall context of the FPR. Currently, the average time taken for the 43 AMAs, or Accreditation Master Agreements, to reach effectiveness is 914 days. So although we have 84 accredited entities, currently there are 43 AMAs that have reached effectiveness. I do also want to point out that the data that we've used in the FPR is valid till the 28th of February 2019. While exploring this accreditation process, just for your edification, there are three stages of accreditation. Stage one and stage two is the secretariat review and the review by the accreditation panel. Currently, the secretariat process is about 20 to 25 entities and brings them for board approval every year. There are 107 entities that have applied for an OAS account as of the 28th of February, and 106 that are waiting in the stage one and stage two process. After board approval, there is a post-approval process. During post-approval, the secretariat essentially sits down with the entities to then negotiate terms and conditions in the AMAs to ensure that there is high compliance with policies that are currently GCF policies, but are also consistent with the entity's own policies. We find that accreditation times are overall increasing. This is a box plot, Chair, and a box plot essentially indicates what the median time is for entities depending on the board meeting that they got approval at, as well as the variance or the variability in times for them to get approved as accredited entities. What this overall diagram essentially shows is that accreditation times are increasing for entities and becoming more unpredictable in terms of the variance or the variability that they encounter when coming to the GCF. So our key takeaways from the first set of questions are, getting to the starting line, so that is effective accreditation, takes a while for entities. Accreditation overall needs a strategy, We are aware that a previous review has been undertaken also by the Secretariat. I think the important point that the FPR is making is that accreditation needs to be viewed in the overall, in the context of the overall strategy of the fund. And in this, it needs to essentially examine the extent to which accreditation is helping the fund create a portfolio of entities that can help it to move towards a paradigm shift. This strategy should look at what accreditation can help the fund do, but also what it cannot help it do, and should have targets and KPIs. Within the accreditation process, we found that, contrary to popular opinion, direct access entities, when they do make it through, and so when they do become effective, and currently there are 25 direct access entities that are effective, they have witnessed a shorter period of time to get to effective accreditation compared to international accredited entities. The second question we looked at, Chair, is the GCF able to deliver large climate investment flows? Within this question, it's clear that the GCF is the largest climate fund globally. It has, within its influence and use, diverse instruments available which are greater than any others that we know. It has committed within this $5.3 billion. But again, we looked at how long does it take entities, even after credit being effectively accredited, to get to GCF funds. So overall, once a funding proposal has been submitted, it takes approximately 9 months for entities to get board approved, but then another year to get them become effective with their FAAs, or funding activity agreements. So of the 102 funded proposals, it took them on average 8.5 months to get to board approval. That's not a bad period of time. But less than half of these funded proposals are currently effective. So there are 50 FAAs that are currently effective. And that means that they are able to get resources from the GCF. Overall, after getting board approved, FAA effectiveness takes over a year. We decided to look at this process as well, and we find that there are different reasons as to why it takes so long for FAA effectiveness to occur. And these can be parsed into different reasons, but most of them are related to looking at compliance and coherence with policies that the GCF has. And we looked at these and divided them into recognizing that FAAs either had unclear technical and commercial matters or conditions, that there were AMA negotiations that need to still occur even after FAAs have become board, even after funded proposals have become board approved. And this was at B17, that the board decided that there could be no FPs that are brought for board approval without AMAs being signed. But these issues are still continuing and are still being discussed, which then contributes to long delays. And last but not least, there are unclear commitments that the GCF policy frameworks ask entities to make, which become clear to them only after they start to discuss their AMAs. Overall, we find that time for FAA execution is definitely reducing. It's going down from 16 months to 8 months, which is great for the GCF. But major structural challenges remain, and these are important. Most of these are informed by the overall requirements for compliance and consistency with GCF policies. So overall, if we look at the overall question of how long does it take for an entity that has applied for accreditation to get to the first GCF dollar, there are two processes that entities have to go through. The first is accreditation, and the second one is project cycle. And on average, entities essentially have to encounter more than 1,100 days to get to their first disbursement. These 1,100 days vary. They are lower for direct access entities, higher for international accredited entities, but they vary, and this is just an average of the overall range and in some ways conservative, but important still to note because because this is essentially what entities have to go through. I think all of this underscores the importance of underscoring the fact that there is currently a large policy burden in one sense, but also critical gaps that remain. So there are many policies that have either been approved already by the board or are waiting to be approved. And yet many gaps remain. So for example, evaluation. For example, results-based allocation. These are all policies that still need to come to the board and still need to be considered. We're saying that currently rigid policies that are insensitive currently to the context of the countries of the funded proposals, as well as the context of the entities and their own policy frameworks, overlaps and unclear delegation are causing a large part of these delays. We're also underscoring the role that climate values can and should be playing in articulating these policies. Many policies that have been approved, currently their climate value is unclear, and it's something that we ask the board to consider as they go along. Currently, when we look at the overall commitments that have been made by the GCF, it's $5.3 billion. That includes commitments for readiness as well as for PPF, as well as for funded projects. But $3.3 billion of these, Chair, are still awaiting legal effectiveness. So our key takeaways from the second question are, currently, there are long waiting times from application to first disbursement, and that's greater than 1,000 days. Currently, there are big burdens that are imposed because of the policies that are there. There is still unclear delegation. And then, in some cases, there are policies that are missing, which means it becomes unclear as to how entities or funding proposals will be dealt with. We're also proposing that there might be a consideration of a differentiated model for different access modalities, capacities, and needs that the board and the secretariat might consider going forward. The third question we looked at, Chair, is the GCF able to make an impact on country needs? The IU Data Lab and the IU team quantified all of the quantified needs in the NDCs and looked at the needs that have been articulated by countries, developing countries, as well as LDCs, SIDS, and African states. And we basically found that GCF's contributions, including co-financing, are less than 1% of developing country climate needs for both mitigation and adaptation, to the extent that these have been quantified in the NDCs or in the INDCs till 2030. And of course, these estimates were made many, many years ago, and these are likely to be even larger now. We also looked at the extent to which LDCs, SIDS, and African states have expressed needs in certain result areas that exist in the GCF. And we find, and I won't go over this chart too much currently, but we basically find that overall the GCF is doing a good job of targeting sector needs that have been specified in the NDCs. More precisely, it's providing good support to countries that require support for energy and food, but it's doing less well for countries when they've expressed needs in efficient transport, forests, and ecosystems. We also looked at GIS locations, polygons, and created a GIS map of all 102 funded projects that the GCF has supported and invested in. And we looked at lots of proxies of vulnerability that are climate-related. We triangulated it with a large number of data sets, and we overall find that the GCF is targeting well again. It is active in regions that have experienced the largest variability, for example, in precipitation. For example, in South Africa, West Africa, and in Latin America. But then looking at other sorts of country needs, we find that GCF commits twice in US dollar terms, in nominal terms, to mitigation compared to adaptation. We know that the board decided at B6 that there would be a grant equivalent representation of how much the GCF is investing in adaptation and mitigation. But given that the dollars or the resources that reach the ground are essentially in nominal terms, we also wanted to look at what this division was in nominal terms. And we find that for every dollar that's invested in adaptation nominally, $2 go to mitigation. This is definitely an opportunity for the GCF, given that a large amount of needs that developing countries currently have are in adaptation. So our key takeaways from question number three were, overall, the GCF is targeting well. It is still very small in terms of meeting overall developing country needs, and this is where it needs to make a greater impact on. Adaptation needs to be re-emphasized in both the portfolio as well as strategically, and we'll talk a little bit more about this. We're also saying that the GCF should, of course, stay in mitigation, but use it as an opportunity to create a niche, which is much more likely to be paradigm shifting, and where the GCF can go in and lead and shape markets which are high risk. The fourth and the last question that we looked at, Chair, was the strategic plan and the focus of the GCF. It's clear that there is the need for a new strategic plan. The initial strategic plan, or the ISP, was fit for purpose in that it provided a lot many objectives for the GCF to look at, but it also provided it fertile ground to explore and to emerge in terms of its own strengths and opportunities. But it did not have the kinds of targets or the implementation plan that a strategic plan should have. And a new strategic plan should really focus on delivery for impact on country needs and focus on speed, transparency, and predictability. It should also focus on innovation, especially in the use of instruments and especially in the area of adaptation. We also recommend to the board that it might consider increased delegated authority to the secretariat, given the context of increased responsibility on the secretariat to turn around advice, investment opportunities, and provide feedback to countries and underscore the need for speed in this space. When we looked at the overall commitments that had been made, but then the disbursements that were currently being realized, this doesn't come as a surprise to many of us, Chair, but of the $5 billion that have currently been committed, $454 million, which is 9%, are essentially dispersed. And $59 million of these are through direct access entities, which represent 18% of the total committed amount. Moving on, we also looked at GCF's use of financial instruments because we think that this is a really key way in which the GCF can leverage impact. And we find that although the GCF has access to a diversity of financial instruments, of the 102 funded proposals, 35 funded proposals used a mix of two or more financial instruments, and these were mostly grants combined with senior loans. We also find that most of the grants, most of adaptation is essentially grant-based, and most of the investments that are made in mitigation are the ones that used financial instruments. Overall, when you look at the question as to whether the GCF is being different from other climate funds, even though it has the ability to be very different, we find given that the number of funded proposals that are there, essentially very few of them use a variety or innovate with financial instruments. This represents an opportunity for the GCF. It could and should consider coming in into mitigation to de-risk in a space where there are an increasing number of actors, including multilateral development banks, DFIs, etc. Currently, the GCF's private sector facility invests in mitigation, but co-invests with other MDBs as well as other institutions that are either, although private sector, that are either publicly funded or our DFIs. We also think that it's an opportunity to innovate in adaptation. It is widely considered that adaptation is not open or fertile for innovation, but we think that given the portfolio and the profile of adaptation-related multilateral investments, there is a huge opportunity there, and I'm happy to discuss that. We also think that in terms of the solutions, especially for impact, that are currently provided to countries to make an impact on their needs, there could be a thinking within the Secretariat where there are incentives created for solutions-driven advice that is given to countries and to entities, and a structure created for life cycle custodianship of GCF investments. When looking at impact, it becomes really important to look at co-financing ratios, because that's one way to think about leveraging impact, but clearly not all of it. And we find that overall, GCF investments, co-financing ratios are overall low, but we also recognize that there is no goal currently for co-financing ratios. But co-financing is only one way in which you can leverage influence and leverage impact. For paradigm shift, scale is important, and a large part of this can come from looking at impact through policy, enabling conditions, and behavior change. And these should be areas of focus for the GCF as it goes along. The last point we investigated in this area, Chair, and although I do want to highlight the richness of the FPR report that I hope all of you have gone through, is the investment criteria. So when we looked at the investment criteria, we understand that the investment criteria currently used both as a signaling mechanism, but increasingly also used by the Secretariat as a prioritizing tool to bring in quality proposals. We find that there's currently insufficient variation amongst investment criteria, especially in terms of variation for recipient needs, sustainable development potential, as well as country ownership. And we find that because there is ambiguity and insufficient definition of these investment criteria, in practice, it leads to long waiting times and then perceptions of non-transparency that do not benefit the GCF. We also recommend that if these are to be used as a prioritizing tool to bring in quality, then some of these investment criteria may be used as minimum criteria, that is, the hygiene for proposals that are coming in so that we can improve quality. When looking at the quality of the current portfolio, we find that they are currently of modest quality, and the likelihood of credible impact, at least given the current scenario, remains modest. These are some of the findings that we made in the overview of the results management framework evaluation that we did earlier this year and submitted to the board. But essentially, just to repeat some of those findings, more than half of the portfolio did not plan for baseline data collection, 2/3 at that time did not have theories of change, and 90% of the portfolio will overstate results. All of this, the good news is within GCF's control. The key takeaways for the fourth question, Chair, is for the board to consider and for the Secretariat to consider a focused strategic plan that focuses on impact and innovation, to think of a phased long-term plan that helps to reconcile many what might be irreconcilable priorities for the GCF, such as recipient needs, country ownership, impact, risk, paradigm shift, to think about delegated authority for procedures, guidelines, and processes for the Secretariat, and for KPIs to be developed for direct access entities, adaptation, private sector, quality, and innovation. Last two slides, Chair. Recap, key recommendations. To deliver better, the GCF should transition from a one-size-fits-all, compliance-driven, and reactive processes to a proactive strategic phase that emphasizes differentiation, impact, and innovation. And the four big recommendations we are making are to deliver better for developing countries and climate, think of a new strategic plan where the GCF is placed as a global thought leader and has a niche in climate impact for developing country needs. Consider that the business model is valid and can create a coalition of the willing for a paradigm shift, but to think of delivering better for transparency, speed, and predictability. to focus and refocus and re-emphasize adaptation and to focus on innovation, especially within adaptation, but not to ignore mitigation as a potential source of a paradigm shift where de-risking is one of the objectives of the mitigation portfolio. And last but not least, re-examine and separate supervision and management of the GCF via delegated authority to the Secretariat. Thank you so much, Chair.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Joe, for that review, which the Board commissioned to learn from our experiences to date and to give us pointers about how we might increase our impact in the future. So it's helpful that you've focused your recommendations in that area. Now, of course, much of this relates to a period before, Yannick, you joined the GCF. You've been kind enough to praise the work of your predecessors, but now we look to you to pick up the gauntlet, as it were, and to give us your impression about how we might respond to some of the recommendations in the report. So I'd invite you to do that now, please.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. At the onset, I would like to deeply thank the Independent Evaluation Unit, Joe, our team, and the consultant for a data-rich, insightful document that will be invaluable as we move toward GCF1. And if I can again praise my predecessors, I'm very pleased to note that the achievements that the evaluation recognized the achievement of the funds over the past 4 years. By the end of the year, we will have allocated about 100% of our resources, and 70% of these resources will be under implementation. I've worked with more than 100 trust funds in my career, and this is a major achievement. Now, this said, we also fully agree with the evaluation team that we need to sharpen our strategic program focus, that we need to sharpen our business model, that we need to sharpen our operational model, and that we need to sharpen our integrated result and resource framework. And in my four following slide, that I will be focusing on it. If I can get the slides, if not, I will go with that slide. So starting maybe with the strategic focus. We did discuss it yesterday when we presented the strategic programming framework. We are organizing, we are focusing, we are proposing to focus our activities on four key outcomes. The first one is to help developing countries to identify and program transformative initiatives, notably using our readiness program. The second outcome is to catalyze innovation, policy, institutional, financial, technological innovation. The third outcome is to help developing countries to mobilize resources at scale. And the fourth outcome is to leverage knowledge to codify the achievement made and ensure that they can be replicated all over the world. If we can go back to the next slide to catch up with it. You will recognize that a number of the point of the evolution when it comes to making sure that we leverage our comparative advantages in terms of innovation, in terms of reaching scale, are being addressed by this sharpened strategic focus. In terms of if we want to see in practice what this means, actually the portfolio that the board members have just approved is a fairly good indication. You have approved 10 projects. Six of the 10 projects were about adaptation, recognizing our deep commitment to adaptation. In line with B6, when you look in terms of grant equivalent, we are actually at 52% in adaptation and 48% in mitigation. We recognize that we have also to reach that objective in nominal terms, or at least come close to it, and that's the reason why the Secretariat is privileging adaptation. Now, if you look at the same portfolio, about the need to basically use our full range of potential financing instruments in order to leverage. We have with the project in Chile, FP115, an excellent example of how from moving from constitutional finance toward de-risking using grant for policy de-risking and the equity finance and guarantee for de-risking, we can reach extremely high leveraging ratio. For example, for FP115 in Chile, our direct leveraging ratio is 1 to 18. But if once this project is commissioned, it will be a plain vanilla project. If we can basically, after a certain period of time, sell our share to institutional investors, we might get back all the public finance that we have been using. And we are giving a completely new meaning to the terms of catalyzing finance. We will be able to use some public money in order to accelerate private investment, and we will get back the public money at the end that we can reinvest in other initiative. And for example, this project in Chile also addressed one of the comments of the evaluation, which is that right now we mobilize mostly public money. Here, we are speaking with Mitsubishi Bank about mobilizing more than $600 million of private money. And so these portfolios that you have just approved actually reflect the fact that the Secretariat fully is fully aligned with some of the recommendations of the evaluation and is already taking note in order to implement them. Importance of adaptation, importance of innovation, importance of using all our range of instruments to develop a niche in the field of mitigation by inventing a new type of blended finance. Next one. No, business model. And a lot of this has, we operate through accredited entities. We are not a bank, we are not an independent agency, we are a fund. Our job is to help a number of accredited entities to actually magnify their impact through providing them the missing piece of finance for them. And and it's true that transaction times for the AMA and the FAAs, none of us should be pleased about where we are right now. But we have seen some quite dramatic improvement in terms of how we implement our business model for accreditation. And maybe I will directly go for the sake of time through that slide. It is, in terms of FAA, I'm pleased to report that indeed we have reduced from 16 months to 8 months in average the time it takes for FAA. Nothing to brag about 8 months, but actually there is something to brag, and that all of us will be able to brag at the end of the day, is that now we have established a best practice for FAA. It's less than 24 hours after board's approval. We will be signing this afternoon the FAA for a project FP108, climate resilient and integrated water in the Indus Valley for Pakistan. Why? Why have we been able to cut from 60 months to 8 months to 24 hours? Because basically, rather than doing things sequentially, we are now increasingly working in parallel. And with FAO, I think it's our third or fourth project. And we have learned a lot about what were their constraints. They have learned a lot about what were our constraints. And so because with FAO, we have not been able to develop the template FAA, we decided not to wait for the board approval. We decided that we would take the risk that the board will approve the project. And we worked in parallel on the FAA. And so because the board has approved the project as it stood, because we had negotiated everything, I would like to invite you to a drink tonight for the signature of the FAA of FP108, approved less than 24 hours after the board. We might not be able to do this every time. I don't want to have this as a new standard. If I have understood the way the board operates, I prefer to get this proviso. It's not a campaign promise. Paul Dan Rinaldo. But what it shows is that as we are moving toward template FAAs, as we know more and more our partners, as our partners know us more and more, and as we start working in parallel, we should be able to dramatically reduce the time. We have other options to reduce the time that I will come back later. Now, at the end of the objective at the end of the year,
We had 40 FAAs last year prepared. We are now at 56 FAA. We should be at 57 FAA at the end of the day and at the effective FAA. And at the end of the year, we should be at least at 70 effective FAA, 84 signed FAA. And that's the reason why I mentioned that we could reach 70% in terms of under disbursement. And in terms of actual disbursement, we could get close to 1 billion. I wanted to take 30 seconds of bragging because I really want to thank the colleagues who have been working on that one. So next one, in terms of our operational model, one of the main complaints we keep getting from our project partners is that they get different set of inconsistent comments from us. And that they have very much the impression that the comments is not the comments of an institution, but is very much whether the person on the other side of the line likes it or doesn't like it. And so what we decided to do in April was to basically map our project cycle. Who is doing what? And how many intervention points we have? And we came to the conclusion that we had 81 points in our project cycle. And what we did was to clarify the role of each of our programming division, we created a project cycle throughout the entire project team throughout the entire project cycle, so that a partner should only get one set of a comment, and there will be the comment of the GCF secretariat in line with the instruction it's got from the GCF board. Not because Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so saw that that day. There were a number of other reasons why we decided to sharpen operational model. As I mentioned yesterday, it's also because we are moving toward implementation. It's difficult to say how much efficiency gains we will have to achieve, but I would say 40% is the initial target for us in terms of efficiency gain. By the end of the year, we should have a number of manuals that should help all our partners to understand how we work. We will have basically a manual on how to prepare a funding proposal, supported by 14 sectoral guidelines. We will have an operational manual describing our project cycle, and we will have a policy manual describing how we develop one policy. And when it goes to the board, what kind of process? And how can we make sure that everybody is consulted on time in a transparent, accountable manner? And when this goes to the secretariat, what kind of process? The next one. No policy and governance. We have also had the opportunity to discuss about some of the initiatives that could be done and that could dramatically increase our efficiencies when it comes to policy and governance. One of them, for example, could be that as part of the strategic plan, we will have one annex about our policy agenda for the next 4 years. And so what kind of policies do we have to develop in order to implement the strategic plan? So we start from the strategic plan. We identify the policies we have to develop. These policies, which one are real policies, political policies, policies that require the board members to basically reach a consensus? And which one are operational modalities? And so which one go to the board, which one do not go to the board? And this is policy agenda for the period 2020-2023, for example, will be decided by the board. It's the board who will decide, okay, this I believe is a policy for me. No, that one, I feel comfortable. And so we will definitely like put in place a compact with the board, between the secretariat and the board, where we provide you the information in a very transparent manner so that we can have a discussion on what do you feel comfortable about delegating to us. And this will be codified and recognized. In turn, if we have more delegation, we will be able also to decentralize more of our decision, and this could very quickly become a virtuous cycle. I will maybe stop here, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, both Joe and Yannick, for the enthusiasm and grip you both demonstrated here. And for another example, as it strikes me, of GCF reviewing, learning, and adapting. and trying to make a virtue of those processes. After all, we're in the business of helping others review, learn and adapt, so it's right that we do ourselves. And that FP 108, 24 hours from approval to FAA signature, is definitely worth a drink, even though it's not a campaign promise. So thank you very much for those remarks, Yannick, and your suggested approach. But there will be others from the floor, and indeed, Eamon was the first to raise his flag.
Thank you very much. Thanks to Jo and her team for a very comprehensive assessment and review of the fund. I'd like to thank you all for the hard work you have put into this. And I just would like to reflect on our perspective as developing countries' perspective when it comes to this fund. Perhaps this is something that I, for one, did not see this in the evaluation. This fund is an operating entity of the convention. In the convention, there are those who are called Annex I countries, there are those who are called Annex II countries, and there are those who are called non-Annex I countries. And because of those categorizations, we have something that relates to paragraph 11 of the convention that establishes that there is a commitment on developed countries to provide financing to developing countries without shifting financing liability to developing countries. I see we are delving into co-financing and leveraging. All that will do nothing but shift financing liability to developing countries. We're not in the business of making money here. We're in the business of expending money to pay to developing countries money to adapt and perhaps if they're able to mitigate climate change. So there is an issue of historic responsibility that tells us that this is a public fund. The basis for it is grants. And that is not in the storyline that we see here. You're suggesting improving the instruments, doing this and that. This is in principle that it does not really speak to the context of the convention and the established commitment for Annex I and rather Annex II countries when it comes to climate finance. Another point that has to do with the status of the fund when it comes to manpower. I can tell you in 3 years' time, we have lost all management of this fund. In 3 years' time, we lost all management, including the General Counsel. In 3 years' time, we had three EDs. Glad to have Yannick with us now. He is in nobody would invade your position, Yannick, to be able to put us on track as far as the Secretariat is concerned. We suffered a great deal of attracting people. You know, it was a big, big challenge. We suffered a great deal of attrition of manpower, and we're still going through this attrition of manpower. I would have wished that we'd have a graph that you would plot the headcounts of the Secretariat over time to see that there was a spike in manpower just last year when we jumped from 140 to 200 something. That where you will see now the impact of it in coming years, where we will improve many of the performance of the fund in terms of handling accreditation or funding proposal or executing projects. When you see that improvement, not because we did not do things right, just because we have the manpower now to do it. And I'm sure under the new leadership with Yannick and his vision, we will improve that area. So manpower is the greatest risk that we had and is the greatest problem that we had. And it's just why you see all these, the number of days reaching to 1,000 days, just because of the fact that we are going through, I would call, turmoil of manpower. You know, everybody knows about this, and we had issues when it comes to, you know, the HR and the ability for us to, you know, we need to stabilize the Secretariat. We need to really provide for a better environment for the Secretariat to function. Now we are, I think, at this level of manpower headcount, we are at a level where we can deliver results and be able to do a better job. What I think we should really focus on, not changing the character of the fund through changing the instruments, we should focus on what needs to be done to empower the secretariat to do a better job. That's what the board should be doing. The board has nothing to do with the delay and delivery of the products of the fund. We're not a resident board. We don't micromanage the secretariat. The secretariat that is fully equipped now and under Yannick's leadership and with the proper delegation guide of authority that you just suggested, Yannick, we're ready to give you that for you to be able to be more at flexibility to respond to changes. And this is perhaps something that we need to sit down and talk about. I would once again thank you for the evaluation for the report, but I would really ask you to please contextualize it under the convention and remember that there are basic principles that we cannot departure from, suggesting increasing co-financing and leveraging and conditionalities and concessionalities and the rest of it. These are policy issues that have to do with the principles of the convention, principles of the Paris Agreement and the rest of it. We don't have principles actually for Paris Agreement, but the provisions of Paris Agreement. We really have to be careful here. By the way, Paris Agreement doesn't have objective. I just always remind myself and everyone, we don't have an objective for Paris Agreement. It has a purpose to enhance the implementation of the convention. So everything goes back to the convention. So we'd wish that for the future assessment, we see a different storyline that puts us all back to where we belong, and we belong only to the convention and nobody else, and we're not an MDB, nor we should be compared to any other financial institutions, because we are not another financial institution. We are a fund created under the convention, and we will remain to be as such, hopefully for some time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eamon, for those observations and linkages to the convention. Paul, I see you next.
For several years running, I've recommended indicative time limits for different steps in the processes of the GCF. And when I give talks on the GCF, the criticism that it's slow and takes too long, I deal with that by the example of the SAP, that we do have a mechanism, and the example of Namibia, which agilely, as you know, after the approval of the SAP in Cairo, immediately got on the job with direct access from the Ministry of Environment in Namibia. And in Songdo in February, they had SAP 001 approved in 4 months. And that impresses everyone. But I can't go on fooling everyone with SAP 001 as exemplary of the institution in general. It's a good example that what we could do and can do. But 1,126 days is indeed sobering. Of course, that's a historic data, and I don't think it's the data now from what the executive secretary has told us, the executive director has told us, in terms of the recent improvements. I was very pleased to see that the process mapping has been done, and 81 process points have been identified. That's a step forward for introducing time management in the organization in general. So there could be indicative times for process in those 81 points. And each one of those 81 points could have an indicative time. And if we had our system, the computerized system, one could sit in Brasilia and look at the screen and see where the project is and how long it's been, where it is, or in Managua, and see where there are bottlenecks also. Management here will be able to see where the work is not getting through expeditiously, and also where there might be the need for workload revision, because there's too much workload at certain points and not enough at other points. But the thing is that one has to get out of whenever as a time management system. Whenever can't be. There has to be a limit. And that limit then can produce, generate statistics, which will be useful for management and useful for the board as well, to improve times and look at the way to combine document management with time management to increase transparency, accountability, and effectiveness. So I think that this process mapping is an excellent step in the right direction, and it should be taken advantage of now to complete the process with the document system and the indicative time management system. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. We've heard you before on that subject. Thanks for reminding us of its importance again. Richard.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank you, thank you for the presentation you have made, also the Secretariat. I think this is a very important presentation, and I think it's a very important analysis, a very important report for me, because apart, of course, from what Ayman said in terms of improving it, I think it's important that it has come at the right time. And I'm glad that the Secretariat has responded immediately, because if you see what you have done within the 6 months, I think this is very, very impressive. And basically responding to exactly what the report has found out in terms of what we can do to improve the performance of this fund. At the beginning of your presentation, you talked of how we can do better. It's not that we are not doing anything. How we can do faster. It's not that they were very slow, and this is very important. And many colleagues said this is a unique fund in terms of what it has been able to do within 4 years, and therefore what we need to do is how we do it better and faster. But seriously, it is still unique in terms of what we have been able to deliver. We have some shortcomings in terms of what my colleague said, but I think it's important that we do recognize that. One area which I thought would be important and which you raised pertinently is the fact that this fund currently provides about less than 1% of the total needs of developing countries. I think I would maybe want to see whether you could probe further on that area and see what can be done better to improve that area. We are in the replenishment period, and I think I do recognize that this fund, unique as it is, but still has a very little portion of what is needed by developing countries. Anything we can do to improve that area, that it can do better for developing countries in terms of amount of resources coming through this fund. I'm not sure how we are going to do it, but being unique, we could find ways of making even contribute more to developing countries, because the structures we are putting in place, the ambitions, the determination makes a better fund, and therefore to require more money coming through this fund to the developing countries. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Next, I see Jeremiah.
Thank you, co-chairs, and thank you for the opportunity. Let me join colleagues and previous speaker to first commend Jill and the team and the secretariat through the executive director for the response provided. It can be recalled that between B20 and B21, when I think the board were deliberating on taking stock of where and how much this fund has done, trying to document all that have been done to kind of have a good picture of where we're supposed to be headed. Key concern then or question have been asked whether or not do we have sufficient time to be able to conduct a credible review of the fund, given that we have a specific period of time for the replenishment period, a very short period of time. Let me say clearly and emphatically that I think Jill and the team have done an excellent and remarkable job within the constraint of the time. And I think the content of the review kind of cover reasonably, if not fairly, and meets the expectation for some of us what we are looking for. We acknowledge the fact that there are a lot to be done while recognizing the efforts that have been made from the beginning. And one of those things that we acknowledge that we have to deal with is the time that it takes for entity to be accredited, the time money takes to trickle down to people who need them, precisely in the area of readiness and other instrument. For us, particularly readiness, as the Secretary continuing to endeavor to improve on it, we think we need to reach an efficiency level, because readiness is enabling activity that prepare countries like least developed country, seeds and African states, to be able to develop or put into place certain foundation. The time it takes to access these resources also has impact on the ability to be able to develop funding proposal skill or have certain institutional or basic foundation to be able to move to the next stage. So it's going to be important to see how we handle this looking forward. And so let me also mention another key component. We recognize the fact from the initial replenishment or resource mobilization, the composition, the mix of the financial instrument in terms of proportion or portion. And as we move forward and look forward, we also acknowledge the fact that the financial landscape or contributing landscape is challenging. And so there is this tendency of trying to come up with innovative way to get climate financing. But I want to caution all of us as we proceed forward that at this point, in this phase of GCF, I think we should continue to look for avenue and opportunity to increase public finance, precisely the grant component. While we welcome innovation to be able to use all of funding instrument like guarantee and other innovative financial instrument, but for the majority of the developing country, at least developed countries like Liberia and the rest, we will be looking forward to the grant component. So I think exploring in the first replenishment phase to maintain the level of grant or increasing the level of grant as we move forward will be a key component for consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Jeremiah, for reminding us we need the right instrument for the right job. Well.
Thank you very much, co-chair, and thanks, of course, to Joe and the IEU team for their presentation, and also, of course, to the executive director and his team for their response to this very important report. I personally benefited from hearing it twice in the informal meeting and then now again to be able to sort of digest the overall content in there. And I should say, first and foremost, I have one remark to make, which is in line with the points made earlier by Ayman. The issue of always reminding ourselves of the main objective of this fund, the uniqueness of this fund, and also of its being part of the global effort under the UNFCCC to address the needs of developing countries, in particular in receiving finance, and that is part of the overall package coming out of the UNFCCC process and complemented by its Paris Agreement most recently. So that prefaces pretty much all of my remarks. In that vein, I should also mention the point, and I had it written here, but Ayman was quicker to the gun than I was in making the request for the floor, which pertains to the issue of leveraging and the co-financing issue. This is very relevant to the preface that I just made and the uniqueness of this fund. And we are aware of leveraging and co-financing other institutions, but this is very, very different. And we'd like to caution against any haste in moving in that direction. We heard it in the IEU's report, but also in the response from the ED. So we just need to flag that this is something that we need to be very careful with. Now I want to move to a more conceptual point. When we look and assess the work of the GCF, as we're now doing, and this is a very healthy exercise, and we acknowledge the tremendous work that's been done, the achievements, the actual difference that the fund is attempting to make, bearing in mind, of course, that it is still a young institution, it's building itself up. But there are such, while we acknowledge all the positives, and I've been propagating to make sure that everyone sends out a message that is very positive about the work of the fund, now in-house, as we're looking at this assessment, there are some alarming facts that have been presented to us. I'll just go through the headings. I wrote down five, but there are more. But on the accreditation, the times are increasing and becoming more unpredictable. So we have a problem, and we have established that it's getting worse. On disbursement, 1,126 days to get the disbursement. That is an alarming figure. Joe mentioned the policy's burden. What are we going to do about that? That is a stumbling block on the path to people getting their funds funding proposals approved and then delivered. And what are we going to do to ensure that while we're devising new policies, we're not even compounding the existing problem? This issue of twice money going to mitigation than adaptation. I, representing a developing country, who incidentally is entrusted with co-chairing with the United Kingdom on issues of adaptation resilience, can tell you the utmost absolute priority that we give to adaptation. We didn't cause this problem in the first place. We're paying a very high price for climate change. Yet we see every institution that we work in prioritizing mitigation. And again, this is happening here. The percentages are alarming, 2-1 at best. Figures I've heard in the past 3 or 4 days even may draw a more grim picture. The relationship to the actual needs as being 1%, of course, no one has any illusion that this fund is going to meet the needs itself. That is just not the case. But 1%, this is just an important figure to keep in mind as we look at replenishment, as we look at other things. I cannot but observe that despite all of these issues, I don't see them prioritized. I don't see any alarm. I don't see anyone proposing them to be the first item on our agenda in the next meeting. How many of them, most of them, I dare say, are systemic issues that can be resolved, can be addressed to effectively, to allow the fund to effectively fulfill its mission. But we're prioritizing other issues. And as we were told before, if we do a Google search out there, we'll find one issue propagated constantly as being the main issue. And I've repeatedly said, and I just need to say it one more time, it is not a silver bullet. When we address it, and we will address it effectively, we will still have all of these issues on board causing potential failures. So that's what I've been trying to say throughout, that let's look at the real issues. Let's look at everything. But to propagate and insist that we have one issue and it's related to one particular, you know, dimension of the governance in the board is doing fine. These are issues, most of them are not directly, you know, related in the hands of the board. But it is the responsibility of the board to take them up and show us that the next agenda items that we're going to be looking at down the road are going to be addressing. And many of these can be addressed. Ayman and others alluded to issues of personnel and problems and retention. Let's just, you know, have a deep analysis into where all these bottlenecks are being created and what we can do, and maybe we'll find quick solutions to some of them that will help us move forward rather than, sorry, obsessing about one issue and linking it to everything as if it's going to resolve all of the problems. So I'm grateful for the presentations, and this is not being harsh or critical to anyone in particular. We all bear the responsibility to make this ship sail smoothly, and we, for one, our group representing Africa are going to work with everyone constructively to make sure that every issue is given its appropriate size and weight and dealt with accordingly. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Will, for highlighting the need to tell the overall positive story, and it is overall, but equally as the board to face up to the range of things that we've got to resolve, and for highlighting some of the key ones as you see them. And of course, you're right, from a UK perspective, we're very conscious of Egypt's very prominent role in respect of adaptation and grateful for it. Now, I'd like to move on to other speakers. I see Lars.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you, Joe, to you and your team. What you have been doing for the last 6 months producing this product within the short time given is nothing less but outstanding. I know you've been working really, really hard. I do hope that you and your team get some well-deserved time off after this board meeting. Speed and impact are the two keywords I take away from your study. You have been pointing to those yourself in your previous presentations throughout the last couple of days. I fully agree with the previous speakers. I think Ayman talked about that in regards to speed, we already do see remarkable progress. Of course, lots remains to be done, in particular to accreditation, as Vael referred to, but we also do see improvements. Yannick, you mentioned the FAAs. We know that disbursement is picking up quite rapidly, which of course is a direct consequence of more FAAs being signed. On impact, of course, I mean, this is impact can be many different things. When I think about impact, it's about how can the GCF contribute to shift the billions to the trillions? Because essentially, that is what is needed. Science is telling us that we have 10 years, basically, to accomplish a paradigm shift. And to be able to do so, we need to shift from the billions to the trillions. What is the GCF's role in that, and what can the GCF do to accomplish that? In that regard, I am, of course, concerned a little bit about the numbers that are presented. $5 billion invested so far have mobilized additional financing, about $17 billion. $1 invested has mobilized $0.83 only from the private sector. I mean, it is the private sector that essentially has to contribute. It's about shifting financial flows. It's not about co-financing. It's about shifting financial flows. In order to accomplish that, it takes a clear definition of what paradigm shift means. And you talked a lot about that already in Oslo. And I guess that's where the policy gap is coming in, to provide clear definition on the paradigm shift, on the transformative impact. I do note that current investment criteria do lack a clear climate dimension. I think that is something that is very important looking ahead, because that's what we're about to do, looking ahead. I also pick up the need of an accreditation strategy. We are currently accrediting on a first-come, first-served basis without having any discussion about who is best suited to support the GCF in fulfilling its mandate. So that's another key thing to focus on. And lastly, I fully support the proposal made to have a clear division of labor, to delegate responsibilities to the secretariat. The secretariat is now having 200 plus people. We want you to be in the driving seat to operationalize what the fund is doing, and for the board to be able to focus on the really strategic issues. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lars, for those reflections. It's a major event, the review, so I don't wish to curtail colleagues, but I have my eye on the clock. And with that in mind, I'd be grateful if we went, I think it's Frank next. It's Frank.
Thank you very much, Joost. Good morning, colleagues, and many thanks to Joe and team and Yannick for the presentation of the forward-looking performance review and the Secretariat's response to it. I will try to be brief. I think what I take out of the review and the Secretariat's response are good news and tasks. Good news, the business model the GCF has been confirmed as being the right one, country-driven approach, and through accredited entities supporting developing countries in achieving the objectives of the convention. I think we need to be very clear that the GCF is an instrument of the convention to achieve the objective. And I would agree that it's critical that we raise sufficient resources for the replenishment, but they are a means of implementation. They are not an objective by themselves. And in this regard, I see that the GCF still is working below its potential. And the task we have ahead is to bring it up to what it can deliver in order to achieve transformation in line of the objectives of the convention, in line with the Paris Agreement, in line with the governing instrument. And there's a long list of recommendations in this regard, how to improve the impact of the GCF. And I think when I read from colleagues' responses as well, that we are in agreement that we need to focus on how to increase the impact. And there are a lot of elements in terms of being more strategic, being more selective, delivering higher quality in order to get the best out of the resources the GCF will raise through the replenishment. And I'm grateful for Yannick's response on the recommendations. I think going forward, the board needs to go in all these level of details, including the dimensions where, from our perspective, there's room for much more improvement through engaging with the private sector in leveraging resources for achieving a higher impact for the public resources the GCF is providing. And I leave it at that with a view of the clock. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank, for highlighting that all the different elements need to work hard to achieve improvement. Cyril.
So Frank said what I wanted to say, so I won't paraphrase just to lose our time. So thank you.
Thank you, Cyril, for that. Again, don't let me cramp your style. I just wanted to be quick. But I appreciate it. Wen Jing, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I have three quick points to make. One, number one, the most important one, I believe that as our staff and secretary already given in the presentation, I believe that the major problem for GCF is on efficiency. We are an effective organization. We are getting done, but we are not getting done efficiently. So and this issue is closely related to prioritization, as Ambassador Weil already pointed out. One of the solutions is that, for example, resource allocation, we need to prioritize. Policy framework, we also need to prioritize. So it's both the work of the secretariat and also our board. To me, for example, the accreditation system is one of the problems, but I would like to leave my detailed comments for a later session. Second point is on delegation. As some board members also pointed out, probably our board need to delegate some power to the secretariat, because under the current situation, we have to admit that the board itself is not so efficient. And also by nature, our board is to make a political decision or on some other most important decisions. Let's leave the operational issues to our secretariat. The third point is related to paradigm shift. As we have seen in the presentation, paradigm shift is about scale. If we cannot provide meaningful financial support, we cannot argue that we are leading the paradigm shift. But currently, we are talking about only $2 to $3 billion dollars on average every year. We see the figures that there is less than 1% of the total needs, which is already alarming. But more realistic comparison is that I would like to suggest for the Secretary next time, please compare our total support with the financial support provided by other financial institutions. I believe that this comparison is more meaningful. In the performance review, we need to set a benchmark. We are not only comparing with other environmental funds, we are also comparing with MDBs and also domestic government who are also mobilizing a lot of financial support in the climate change area, especially that as part of our financial resource is provided in the form of loans. So I think comparing with NDBs is also very meaningful. That being said, I would like to emphasize as my last comments that when we talk about paradigm shift, we need to be also be focused and prioritized. We are a climate institution. Of course, pushing the paradigm shift in climate area is our priority. When we are introducing more and more policy requirements, we need to be cautious. We need to refrain from expanding our mission to other areas, for example, social development areas, which is also important, but probably there are better institutions to do that job. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Wenjing, for pointing out the key things we need to do as you see them in your typically efficient manner. We are going to miss you and your background, because I gather you're not staying with the board in future. That's a pity, but there we are. Paul.
Thank you. When Ambassador Whale underscores the disparity, the imbalance between mitigation and adaptation, it reflects a wider societal problem in which the reduction of emissions has attracted great attention, both with renewable energy and with energy efficiency, as compared to the capture of CO2e and other greenhouse gases that are already in the atmosphere. We're not going to reach 1.5 degrees in this century without doing both. The renewable energy reduction and the energy efficiency gains will not carry us to that scenario. We need also to capture significant greenhouse gases. And part of the problem is short-termism. These others are shorter-term investments than the capture investments with reforestation, for example. I think that there's a role to play. There's an opportunity here in which GCF can look for partners who are interested in long-term investments and incentivize the longer-term investments that are needed to deal with this problem. The short-termism is one of the things that is leading us to extinction because we're not looking at the long run in terms of impacts, but they also have to look at it in terms of investments that can produce the necessary results. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Paul. And we're going to conclude the comments on this item with Sheikh from the board and then Helen from the CSOs. Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. Very quick. Thank you, Independent Evaluation Unit, and the response also from the Secretariat. I have three key findings that I want to comment. The country-driven approach, we have 80% of GCF funding committed through 10 applicant entities on the 84. Most of them are international entity. These have to be addressed. And one reason maybe is the accreditation process takes so long
that many entities give up and the country prefer to be assisted by an international entity. And if I want to recall the objective of the fund, direct access must be also country-driven and push for national entity. The second key funding, the threshold as small, micro, medium, and large need to be analyzed. I didn't see any reflection on that. And in terms of efficiency and opportunity for the country, many applicant entities are in the small size category. That how we can do to upgrade some of them. And finally, there is room also for the fund's performance to reinforce the DNA's role beyond the issuance of non-objection letter to encompass measure and evaluation as part of the accreditation process and to be recipient of all technical and financial report submitted by the applicant entity during the implementation phase. Many DNA, after the approval of the project, didn't know what is going on in the project. Thank you.
Thanks, Scylla, for that reminder. We need to keep in touch with NDAs and what's happening on the ground. Helen.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Good morning. We recognize the significant amount of the IEU, of the work of the IEU that went into the forward-looking performance review, and we'd like to highlight the review's recognition of GCF's rights-based policies, and we hope that the GCF continues to push forward, push forward and upward to set the bar for rights-based climate action, such as the upcoming guidelines for operationalizing the Indigenous Peoples Policy. We also endorse IEU's finding that the GCF should not be contributing much more to adaptation and working more through direct access entities in delivering emission reductions and building resilience, in particular among poor and vulnerable communities in the context of sustainable development. We are highly concerned, though, about the way that private sector involvement is endorsed and praised. We see this trend overall in the adaptation section, where the questions of what contributions the private sector can make to address the needs of the most vulnerable, with a lack of critical reflection where they can really add value and where they can do harm. And we absolutely expect that the GCF maintains and further improves its environmental and social safeguards, and does not lower these standards just to court the private sector. Over time, we have gained a perception that there's a lot of appetite among board members for risk-taking as long as it helps to engage the private sector. While approaches, for example, enhance direct access, which in our view has a great transformational potential, are often regarded with skepticism and constraints in face of potential risks. We are convinced that much of the scale and additional finance has to come first and foremost through greater financial resources from contributing countries, in particular developed countries, rather than leveraging the private sector as key strategy to scale up finance. While innovation can be an important objective of the fund, the GCF must recognize that the lack of ideas or innovations is not the key impediment to more ambitious climate action. Instead, the barrier is insufficient financial resources as well as lack of political will to set right incentives and regulations to scale up approaches which have proven to work. We also believe that innovation and the appetite risk-taking should not focus the conversation on private sector, when true innovation at this stage would mean embracing full cost financing, working through direct access and ensuring funding flows to local communities through re-granting mechanisms, and the greatest risks are to be borne by communities if rights-based approaches are not operationalized at highest standard. While we recognize that delegating tasks to the Secretariat unburdens the board and promotes efficiency, this should not come at the expense of transparency and involvement of the expertise and perspectives from the CSOs. We echo the IEU's call to leverage the potential of CSOs as a key actor with roles and responsibilities in this space, and we support the call for civil society, both financially and operationally, in country and globally, and we stand ready to contribute to the GCF's realization of its potential in alignment with this report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Helen. I am not going to call on Alexandra to make remarks about the private sector role because we haven't time. Ordinarily, I would have for balance, but there isn't time today, so I'm not going to. Rather, I would like to draw the board's attention to the decision at agenda item 11, which welcomes this first review, takes notes of its findings and recommendations, requests the Secretariat to provide a management response to the forward-looking performance review at its 24th meeting, and decides to continue its consideration of this matter at its 24th meeting. May I ask if that meets with the approval of the board? Eamon?
Yes, thank you very much. We will take note of the report in the first sentence, as we normally do. We note the report.
So you, rather than welcoming the first yes. review, you would like to take note of it?
Yes.
Fine. I think in for the sake of...
That's what we normally do. We always note the documents, so it's for them.
We welcome some things, too. We're not just noters, we're welcomers in this house. No, indeed not. You're quite right. Time demands that we get on rather than argue niceties. So A should read, in that case, takes note of the first review. What? Roloff.
Thank you, Chair. I will not block consensus on a different language, but I have not heard anybody not welcome this report, so I find it very strange not to welcome it. Thank you.
Yes, but Roloff, I don't want to... What the board's asked me to do is to get through the business today, and so that's what I'd like to do. Eamon, if we say in under A, we take note of the first review, or are you content that I... Yes, so that's what I'm saying. Takes note of the first review rather than welcomes. Okay? So A is now going to read, takes note of the first review, and B is going to say, takes note of the findings. C requests the Secretariat, and D decides. And with that, may I take it that this decision is approved? It is. Thank you very much.